Welcome to the Chasing Freedom Show. I'm Noah Evans, and on this show, I'm going to creatively break down real estate deals with top investors across the country to help you become closer to achieving financial freedom. Alrighty, let's get to it. What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Chasing Freedom Show. Today, I am overly joyed. I have been fighting for almost a year to get these guys on the show. But it was just a mishap with emails and admin, and they're busy, guys. So you guys, if you're listening, pull over in the car, take out a pen and notebook. This is going to be a powerful show, and I really want you guys to extract everything you can out of it, because Tiffany and Josh are going to lay down gold for you guys. So I hired these guys as my coach. I don't know, what was it? 8 months ago, 9 months ago, somewhere in that realm. I guess probably longer than that. So maybe a year and a half ago or something like that.
Yeah, but I was going to say it was a little over a year ago.
Yeah, sure. But you guys really helped me explode my business, because I had no systems regarding acquisitions or lead flow or lead management. And you guys literally gave it to me on a silver platter, right? And it was just plug and play after that. Like, we got a copy of your Podio system. We got to watch how you guys built this massive sales team. And without you guys, honestly, I wouldn't have been able to scale my side of the business on acquisitions at all. So if you guys are listening, seriously, this is the show to get granular and pay attention and take notes and then follow up with action. But yeah, I'm very excited to have you guys on. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, I'm super excited, man. I feel honored that I even got to be your coach. So I'm excited.
Yeah,
man. Now, we're excited to be on the show. Appreciate you having us, and happy to drop some gems.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, let's jump into the show. We're going to make this show will be a little different on format, because I don't want to go super entry level like sometimes we do on the other shows where we're like, what's your first deal? We're going to go into some higher level stuff. This episode will really be geared towards like the mid-level investor, someone who's doing somewhere between, you know, 3 and 10 flips a year, or 3 and 10 wholesales a year. And we're going to really try to help those guests or those listeners out on how to scale their business. So first thing I wanted to ask you guys is, like, why real estate? Because you honestly could have gone and excelled in any industry. Why real estate?
I mean, good question. Couple things. Real estate's never going to get old. I mean, there's always going to be deals for the rest of our lifetime. You know, there might be market swings up and down, but there's always money to be made in every cycle. And, you know, from a tax purpose, the more money we make, the more we can write off with the more assets that we buy. And that's really the only industry that you can make that happen with. So even for those running companies in other industries, you know, hopefully that at some point they start a business in real estate to offset their income in other avenues.
I love that. I just got back from a mastermind where I thought it was going to be all real estate people. Turns out it was all solar people. So it was like a weird thing where, like, I got invited like 24 hours before the event started and was going to be gone for a week, but I decided to say yes. But these people have a serious issue, right? They're all making $350,000, $450,000 a year door knocking and selling solar systems. But yet the government's then going back in and taking out sometimes up to 50% of what they make. That sucks. You're literally working to just send the government money, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure. What was your, I mean, if you guys don't mind me asking, what was your tax liability last year?
A lot.
Was it?
I paid a 7-figure tax bill.
Whew. But your earnings were probably a 10x, 20x multiple of that. So yeah, in proportion, like, you probably paid pennies on the dollars for what you earned.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, man, nothing's worse than paying the government. So doesn't matter if it's 50 bucks or a million.
So true. It's so hard to give them money. Okay, cool. Well, I want to move on to another question. So for you guys that don't know Tiffany and Josh, you guys have a pretty amazing team. And something that was just mind blowing for me to walk in was you guys had some really high level closers when I first met you. And I remember thinking, like, oh my God, I don't know what I'd do if I lost, like, Justin, my high level closer, right? Like, what would I do? And I remember your guys' response. You're like, dude, it's the system and it's plug and play, and we can lose whoever. We're fine because we're not people dependent. We're system dependent, right? And that was a huge takeaway for me. I can't say that I'm there yet. I'm definitely still people dependent. But I wanted to ask you guys, like, why grow a team? Like, what was it that inspired you to be like, hey, we're going to go big. We're going to have people, we're going to have systems, we're going to have all these processes. Cause in all reality, like, you guys probably could have continued to operate forever just on a 3 or 4 person team and done decent volume. Like, why go bigger?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, If you know what you're doing and you're consistently marketing and maybe you're good at closing deals yourself, by all means, you could do 3-5 deals a month. But the reality is, you know, it's all up to you and what you want. If you want to take that next step and to getting to that end result that, you know, at the end of the day, if I asked everyone that's in real estate, why is it that you're in real estate? It would all boil down to a few of the same things. Ultimately, everyone would say that they want freedom. Real estate brings freedom. I mean, what's the name of the podcast, right?
Yep.
But the reality is that it's not just the freedom. It's what the freedom will get us. Mm-hmm. And that all boils down to spending our time, doing what we want, when we want, spending that time with the people we want to spend that time with. But there's really a three-step process to getting to that point. The first step is where you're wearing all the hats. Mm-hmm. You're the marketing specialist. You're the accountant. You're the bookkeeper. You're closing all the deals. You're doing all the transaction coordination. But you're capped at a certain point. So it's just a matter of, do you want to grow a team to magnify your results? And that's the only real reason that anyone would really want to grow a team is to start to magnify the results. And not just that, but start to impact other people's lives, bringing them into the system and changing their lives forever. So John C. Maxwell actually has this, there's a book that he wrote, 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. And he talks about in this book that the level of your organization is going to be capped by your level of leadership. So for example, if you're a level 4 leader, your organization is going to be capped at a level 4 organization. But the good thing is that you can actually grow that. It's a muscle. And if you continue to work on that muscle, no different than doing bicep curls in the gym. If you grow to a level 8, now all of a sudden your organization can grow alongside of you. Mm-hmm. So by focusing on magnifying our results, by becoming the leader that we need to become, now we start to get the results that we want. And then that's, again, the second step. So the third step, which is the freedom step, this is where we start to trade our money now for time. We no longer have to trade our time for money. I don't have to go bag groceries at the grocery store in order to earn an income. I can do what I want when I want, spending that time with the people that I want, and still have an income coming in from the cash that we have on hand.
Yeah. No, I love that, man. That's such a crystal clear breakdown. One of the things that selfishly, I just want to go a little deeper on, I've heard you mention that before where you're talking about the level of your leadership caps the level that your business can grow to, right? So there's an interesting part of that I want to extract from you. When you have a team, you have an organization, you're in it, you guys are cruising, and as the leader wants to grow and you want your organization to grow with you, there seems to be sometimes a little bit of friction, right? As the leader grows, and sometimes people are afraid of change and they're afraid of expectations changing and you expecting more out of them. How do you get through that awkward period of like trying to raise that bar? And when you as a leader, you have developed yourself and now you're trying to get everyone else to follow. What does that look like?
Yeah, I always tell folks this, that I don't think it matters what industry you're in, but unfortunately, sometimes as you grow to your first million in the company, a lot of times the people that got you to the first million won't get you to the second million. And then the people from the first 2 million don't get you to the third million. Because I always like to just average it out and say every $1 million requires another level of structure, framework, policies, you know, better HR policies as you go to grow as a company. And for those that resist change, they won't last. And that's okay. I think that's it's normal in every company. I think what separates companies one from the next are ones that know and understand that and prepare for it. And they don't let it just slap them in the face when it happens. And, you know, if I could go back and change one thing, I do wish, like I talk about my education space, I wish that I would have went back and hired a COO that was a much higher level people leader from day one. I think that if you look at where we're at today, we maybe would have got there a year ago with that support system. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, man, when you run your first company, you can't always afford that first layer of that higher level of a leader. And ultimately, you have to become a leader first. And it's not something that you can just go to an event and walk home and become a leader. It's a skill set that you have to practice, build, and work on day in and day out.
Okay. There's like this natural flow that's evolving and there's all these questions that are popping up in my head. For you guys, what are some of the top level things that you're doing to constantly be to constantly perform at the highest level of leadership that you can? What are some of those important things that we can extract out for the people listening?
at the end of the day, I always tell everyone, you have to be the best version of yourself first and foremost. Mm-hmm. If you're not growing as an individual, then how can you focus on growing other people? One thing that there's a huge misunderstanding around leadership. A lot of times people think that that's a title or it's just something that you have or you don't have. And the reality is, like I said before, this is a muscle that you have to be working on. And it's very different than management. Managers focus on growing results. They know that if I do A and B, I'm always going to get C. So they're managing metrics. Almost if you think of like the micromanager, you know, they're always in the details of things. But a leader does the complete opposite. They're not managing the metrics. They're not managing numbers. Instead, they're focused on growing people. And that's why I say it's so important that if you're not growing yourself and focused on your personal development, then how are you going to go grow these other individuals?
Yeah, I think another thing, I think more specifically to our industry, because it's all, you know, I know at this point from an education and mentorship perspective, but once you get to a certain level, I mean, the bigger you get, the bigger the problems. Like they just skyrocket in, you know, being able to find better solutions. But to lead other leaders is another aspect to this. And a lot of this hits personal. So it's not just about growing professionally, it's about growing personally. And that means that the type of mentorship you get can be spiritual. It can be therapy for your, like keeping your mental state alive. And so those are a lot of the things over the last year that I've personally invested in, and not just, you know, a business leader that's going to tell me what system to use next. Mm-hmm. And that's really what's been able to help keep me in line with putting guardrails in place, focusing on my family and my marriage. Because when those things are in tune, then I'm a much better leader when I walk in the door at work.
Yeah.
So I think that as you continue to grow a company, we need to remember that it's not just professional leadership. In order to be a great leader, we got to focus on ourselves.
Yeah. And one last comment on this is, it's like we have to create an environment that's conducive for growth. Mm-hmm. And that comes from culture. So the things that we're learning in our personal development, the mentors that we're hiring, if we start to bring all this into our daily conversations, right, our daily huddles, all start with gratitude. And then we are focused on daily training every single day, because one of our core values is growth. But at the end of the day, you have to create a theme that your culture is built around, and then built off of that theme is going to be standards that you guys live by. Mm-hmm. And that's going to become, at the end of the day, I say this all the time, leaders are responsible for creating culture, and that culture is then going to drive the results that we all want. So we have to create this environment that's conducive for growth, and that environment is then going to produce the results that we want.
And you guys are sending like chills down my whole back. Just like, I'm getting so motivated just sitting here talking with you. So it's funny to hear you say that, Josh, about like you as the leader, you're the temperature, you control the temperature of your environment at work, right? Like, are you bringing the energy? Because if you bring the energy, everybody else is going to bring the energy, right? And it's like, I watch you interact with your people and you are like performing at like peak energy all the time. But I see from my perspective, there's so much more that goes into that. You're up in the morning and you read your books, then you hit your workout. And so by the time you come into the office, you're mentally fulfilled because you've been reading and educating yourself and developing yourself up. Physically, you're ready to go because you just got a nice pump in, right? You got blood flowing through your whole body. You're awake. You're alive. And then so by the time you sit down in front of the people that need you to be their leader, you're ready to go. You're at peak performance. You're dialed in, right? And I think that that's so important. So many people miss that. It's like the whole person paradigm, right? So I'm just getting introduced to that concept, right? But there's like four pillars of the whole person paradigm. And it's important that all four of them are aligned for you as a leader. Because you need to lead people in all areas. They need to be inspired by you. So,
absolutely. And I want to share a quick trick or a hack that we've recently incorporated. You mentioned managing energy, and I have to show up every day, and I've got to be full of energy. One thing that we started doing on our sales floor is we walk around. We start every day with high fives. Whenever there's a win of any sort, even if it's like someone on the phone is utilizing a sales tactic that we're training on that week, you know, we go around and we give high fives. The reason why we do that is because of a study that was done, the study was over the MBA. I think it was some student or professor over at Cal Berkeley They did a study on Steve Nash and when he had played in the NBA, they wanted to see if there was a correlation at all between the amount of high fives or fist bumps or chest bumps that went on within any given team. If there's a correlation with how well they did. Well, the result ended up being that the more times teammates were going around giving each other high fives, the teams with the most touches won more games.
Interesting.
And it all, like they said, it all tied into the people that gave each other more high fives. They trusted each other more. They were able to work together as a team versus as individuals. And it's just crazy. So we actually saw that study and we started to incorporate that in our culture. And man, every day that we walk around and we give high fives, there's deals getting signed.
So, cool.
So it's a really exciting, way to turn up the energy on the sales floor. It's a lot of fun.
Do you think hugging has the same effect?
So they said touches. So
yeah, however you want to take that.
Technically, I would say hugging should.
I'm glad that I don't have like a full. I'm glad that I am the HR department because I hug everybody all the time, and I'm like, man, that could get me in trouble in a larger corporation. So. yeah, that's an interesting study. It's fun to see like how much thought you put into all the aspects of driving culture, right? Like, dude, your guys' office is a fun place to be. Like, all salespeople are excited. They're closing deals because, you know, you guys have worked to put the right systems in place. And like you talked about, like creating that environment, that's an environment that invites energy because, you know, you're sitting next door and you see one of the other guys close a deal. You're like, oh man, I got to get one today. I got to get one. I can do it. Right. And it's like motivating.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that there's also some, it's like you can build momentum off of that when there's more than one salesperson on the floor because they can feed off of each other. And I'm sure you watch it. You probably watch leaders evolve on that sales floor, right? Like you'll watch one of the other guys go to somebody else and say, hey man, what did I do wrong? I didn't get this deal and it was a laydown. I should have got it. Right. And do you see that? Do you see like the other guys start to step in and help?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Actually, all of our closers, they collaborate a lot. They actually, every time they go through a process call, which is what we call quality conversation with a qualified opportunity, after they go through that and they're doing their underwriting, they collaborate on the best way to frame their offer. So they're putting together NLP language and other ways in which they can help align with our prospects' needs and their wants to help mm-hmm. their chances of landing the opportunity. So our guys are constantly helping each other.
That's so cool, man. That's such a fun culture when they are working as a team to all achieve. I mean, you guys had some pretty lofty team goals rather than competing with each other to say, individually, I just want to win. Like it feels like everybody there really wants to win together.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll let Tiff talk a little bit about that structure. But real quick, you know, the reason our core values and everything that we do, you know, one of our core values is actually teamwork. And I've seen a ton of people in the industry. They have these rules around owning leads and not owning leads. And then, you know, someone steals a lead and then they next thing you know, the acquisition specialists are tackling each other. They're fighting in the office because someone stole their opportunity and they closed the deal when it was supposed to be theirs. And we didn't want to create an environment like that. So instead, you know, we decided to set our core values around teamwork and made sure that our compensation structure aligned with that. So if you want to talk a little bit about that compensation structure.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that we changed a few years ago, back when I was originally getting like mentored into the industry, a few things were happening. You'd bring in a salesperson and you would try to build this team and they, you know, say 10 new leads came in today. A lot of people have it where, you know, Tiffany is the lead manager on this lead. And then after I'm here for a year, all of a sudden I got 2,000-3,000 leads under my name. And like, it's just damn near impossible to actually keep up with the follow-up on that. And so that lead is not, you know, Tiffany's lead. It's the company's lead. And at the end of the day, we want to incentivize our team to perform as a unit, not just as an individual. So yes, they have minimum expectations per month and they get incentivized on a tier structure, the better that they perform individually. But they actually get a much bigger team payout bonus based on if the unit wins as a team. So this year, one thing we've done is we've broke it down into 2 6-month team bonuses. And at the end of the day, at least in our industry, you know this, you know, it's a sales and marketing company, you know, where education, you also got fulfillment, you got a bigger marketing arm, all the stuff. But in the active space, you know, you got your marketing and your sales. And so all I want my sales team focused on is revenue. That should be their driving mission. Yeah, the company might have another, you know, much bigger mission, but that individual unit's mission is revenue. And so you should understand your company's goal going into this and backtrack it. And if they hit this number, then as a unit, they get paid a percentage of the bucket. And ever since we've implemented this team bonus every Monday in our team meeting, guess what they're asking about?
How close
Where are we at against the team bonus? Where are we at? Where are we at? Where are we at? Because the sooner they hit it, the faster they get paid. So you obviously want to make it attainable and give it a time period that they're like inching up against that time period, mm-hmm. and they may or may not hit that number and they're striving to get it. So it's been one of the most successful things that we've rolled out over the last couple of years and really has created a much bigger team environment because not every team needs to have A players. You really do need your average players and your bench players that step up. Like, you know, any sport needs that, right? Mm-hmm. Not everyone needs to be the highlight star player. And so let's say that I hit my minimum expectations and I'm on par to do what my job is, but I know that someone else will get this done better than me and I pass it to them. As long as the unit wins, I'm still getting a crazy bonus payout. So that's one thing we've implemented. And I definitely encourage other teams to do that.
Hey, Noah, I want to go back to that example that you asked me. You know, you brought up the fact of a closer loses an opportunity that they felt was a laydown and they should have landed. Mm-hmm. So with our structure and because of the way that we've incentivized our team, now imagine where you own the lead and you're selfishly holding on to this, hoping that you can get that seller mm-hmm. back on the phone because you selfishly want to make the commission because you're afraid that you'll lose an opportunity. You have an opportunity in front of you and you're trying to find a way to save it. Well, with our structure and the way that we've incentivized our team and the way that our culture is built is now, how can we work together amongst closers to close these opportunities that maybe I messed up? Mm-hmm. I would, you know, our guys go to the next person and say, hey, can you call them? Can you give it a shot? I ruined the opportunity, but I think you still have a chance if you just give them a call.
So now all of a sudden,
instead of selfishly hoarding these opportunities, we're working together to get deals closed, which is what we all ultimately want.
Yeah, I love that. Can we get a little granular on your guys' the actual pay structure? Like, give me the percents and what that looks like if you feel comfortable, but if not, it's all good.
Yeah, I mean, the team bonus structure, we change up for every team bonus. Mm-hmm. So that's going to really depend on the actual companies, like operational overhead, all that. But just for the purpose of the podcast, maybe look at it as in like a 2-4% of the overarching revenue of what you hit. It just depends though, again, like on what your, anyone's net percentage is.
And that's over the entire team. It's not per individual.
Yeah. Cool. So like they have, I'm just going to make this up, but let's just say some team has like $1 million goal to hit in 6 months. So that would be theirs. And then it'd be a percentage of that $1 million. Now on the individual basis, one thing that we're big on is that you pay a base salary. I know some guys in the industry, they come in, you get straight commission. And then I'm not going to go too far into this because I could talk an hour on it, but I'm totally against when people bring people in as salespeople and make them 1099. And the reason why is because you're asking someone from the second that they join your company to be an entrepreneur, think like an entrepreneur, do their taxes like one. And so when you're asking for them to do that versus being bought into a vision and a career path with your company, that's the result you're going to get. So don't be surprised if in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, they're going to go do something else because they're not bought into your vision, right? And at the end of the day, if you tell them where to be, when to be, you get their equipment, you train them and set expectations, you're also an employee. So sorry, I'm going on that rant, but I think it's one of the biggest mistakes I see a lot of teams do. And then they wonder why they have turnover. And it's because they're bringing people in that you're asking them to run their own operation, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's huge. And so I kind of want to just recap that real quick because I don't want someone to miss that, right? What you're basically talking about is too many real estate entrepreneurs, when they bring on these salespeople, are treating their employees like they should be their own little entrepreneur inside their organization. But if you treat them like that and you expect that, that's why they keep leaving. Because, yeah, they're doing everything, right? They're setting their own schedules according to actual 1099 employees, right? Creating their own scripts and essentially they're running their own little acquisitions department. Well, if they're going to do that for you, why not go do it for themselves? So you're setting yourself up for failure versus creating the culture like you guys are talking about, creating the systems, plugging them in as an employee, and allowing them to scale up inside your business. That's the other cool thing that's I love about your guys' company is from the day you start, you know exactly how to get to the next step, what metrics you'll have to hit to do that, and what's in it for you for doing it. That crystal clear path, I think it allows people to buy in faster and to buy in at a deeper level because they're like, okay, I don't have to guess what's in it for me if I succeed. I know. I get it. I know what the next step is.
I think that part's so huge. Yeah, we have a, so the big thing in our interview process is that people come in and they have a very defined career path from a sales perspective. You start as a follow-up specialist, you become a senior, then you become a closer, then a senior closer, then a team lead. Every single one has clear expectations of how you attain it, what the minimum amount is you'll be getting paid if you hit minimum expectations, what an average performer makes, what a high performer makes on average with the company. So when you're in the third and fourth interview with my company, you already know the answers to this before you decide to shake my hand and say, yes, I want to be a part of this team. And too often people rush that hire, they get them in-house and then throw them this commission, give them a few videos to watch, have them shadow them and say, oh, let's perform. And then they don't even set the expectations on what they're supposed to perform by or what metrics or anything. And, you know, speaking of leadership, like that's really where people have to hone in. And, you know, I'll be direct. I think the reason why people make start out as 1099, they tell themselves it's because they're saving money. I think it's a cop out that they don't want to learn how to be a real leader.
Yeah, I think that's huge. They're afraid to commit to that salary because they don't know if they can perform as a leader to lead that person to success.
Yeah. I mean, here's the deal, man. If we don't feel like we can believe in supplying a career path for somebody, then we shouldn't be sitting in the owner's box.
I think that's huge. Yeah. It's been cool too. Can I share a story with you guys about how, what you've taught me about as far as like laying out that structure and telling people what's in it for them, why it matters.
Yeah.
So, okay. This story is funny. I think I've shared it before on the podcast, but just a few months ago, I had finally gotten around, I mean, you guys taught me this, I don't know, a year and a half ago, but I finally got around to laying out a more crystal clear path for Justin, my acquisitions manager. And I laid out for like how he can become a part of the company cash flow, how he can get his percentages bumped up so he can earn more per deal. And I set the metrics out. I'm like, if you hit this, this bumps up. If you hit this, to get specific, he's at 10% of all wholesale and flip transactions as far as a net revenue standpoint goes. I said, if you hit our revenue goal, which we kind of really only we redefined this revenue goal because we split companies. So redefined it 3 months ago. So if you hit 600 grand this year in net revenue, I'll bump your commission structure up for next year. And you get to keep that commission structure as long as we go above last year's revenue goal. So that wasn't enough. Like I also lined out exactly what was in it for him as far as like a cash flow standpoint, which bam, that hit like motivation hard for him, right? Now every single day he's texting me and he's like, hey, by the way, if we take down this Airbnb, we're $4,000 closer to our cash flow goal. He's like, we only got six more to go. He's like, and he's just going so much harder at it. And now he's so much more motivated and he's like, he's creating momentum in his own realm that I'm not having to push. I don't have to create that momentum. He's now doing it for the company, which is really, really impactful and cool to see. And it wears off on other people, right? So then Sam, my operations manager, sees Justin just like going ham at trying to find these properties. Like he is dialed in on trying to find cash flow right now. And so Sam sees that and she's like, well, we need to build better systems to manage that. So now she's bought in and now she's going after it. And I do need to go paint a crystal clear picture for her of how she could become involved in cash flow and what's in it for her for going harder. But like none of that would have happened had I not painted that picture longer or further out for them so they can see what's next.
It's amazing awesome. What some clarity could do, you know?
It was cool, man. Yeah. So yeah. The next thing I want to get into is the amount of transactions you guys do is pretty insane. And I want to talk about what type of backend system you've created to manage. Are you guys at like 200 transactions? You're over 200 transactions.
Over 300 this year.
That's so freaking wild. So what is that? How do you manage that many transactions? What does the backend system look like?
I mean, we have, just so everyone knows what our operation looks like, we've got three closers, three follow-up specialists, soon to be four or five follow-up specialists, a sales team lead, and we have one operations coordinator who handles all of our transactions in the queue, and she also does our project management. I get the question a lot is, how does she handle that many transactions? And I'll be honest, she's very rarely at the office past 5 o'clock. And the reason why is because of the one, the training that was provided to her, how the system supports her to make sure that everything is streamlined. It's very clear cut. Everything has a checklist and a scalable process to follow. Now, did I always have that? No. If you go, actually, the biggest mistake I made in the last couple of years was I actually didn't have that role fully streamlined. I paid for a mentor to streamline that role for me. And it's been just a smooth sailing since. It's no different than the sales role. You've got to build a check the box process. Nothing falls outside of it or it's not scalable. So that's what our team looks like in the office. We're probably going to do a little over 4 million in wholesaling at least this year. And then we also, have a company in Pakistan, a team of VAs that, runs all of our marketing. So they're the ones, you know, responding to messages, scheduling our list, tagging our list, managing our data, pressing pause, play, tracking things, sending us our KPIs. At this point in the company, I spend 1 to 2 hours a week managing, overseeing the back-end marketing ops team, making sure I understand KPIs, all that. And then I raise all the money for the company. So if there's rehabs in the queue, our ops coordinator and Josh say, hey, we need $1 million raised by this date and time, do it. And I say, okay, and that's my job. So I'm not as much in the day-to-day. Now, Josh is the COO, so he is sitting in the middle of the floor, making sure, overseeing our ops leader, our sales leader, and just making sure that operation is ticking every day.
That's an impressive structure.
Sorry, went on a rant there.
No, I think that that's good for people to see like what this can grow to, right? How long did it take you to build this team? I want to give the perspective to the listeners of that.
So we started in 2017. We did about 40 rehabs. Well, first of all, it took 6 months to find our first deal. We did about 40 rehabs the next year. And then at the time, rehabbing wasn't real scalable for us. We just weren't at the time good at managing all these contractors. So we went to wholesaling. We did about 165 wholesales that next year. And then we realized, man, we're selling these deals to flippers that are only putting like 10 grand into a property and making another 40 grand. So why are we selling these? And so I think the next year we said, okay, we can scale this up much bigger. We just got to put firm criteria in place of what we will or won't do on a rehab. So for example, some people are great at the high end gut flips. I despise gut flips. There's no amount of money, honestly, unless it's like seven figures, that will make me want to do one. So we have very clear cut criteria for our dispo and sales team of, you know, the year that it has to be built after, you know, bed, bath, garage, and we do not get into walls. We don't do new electric and plumbing. And so that's our buy box. So if it fits into a certain buy box with a certain minimum threshold, then we will rehab it as long as it makes more money than wholesaling it. So we do a mixture of rehabbing and wholesaling. The only time we will slip outside that buy criteria is if we run into a house where, let's say it makes 40 to 50 grand mm-hmm. as rehabbing it, but it literally cannot be wholesaled. Like it's just not a deal as a wholesale. Then we will consider it because the last thing we want to do is walk away from a deal on behalf of the team.
Yeah.
So we really try hard to maximize our exit strategy. So for every dollar spent in marketing, we truly can try to maximize the return on that dollar. Where, you know, a lot of folks in the industry understand wholesaling is a way to get in the game. But the reality is that you can't survive off $10,000 to $12,000 margins. And you're also just walking away from deals if you aren't willing to take it down, Airbnb it, rental, flip it, et cetera. So you really have to maximize that or your overhead's not going to make sense.
What's the defining metric for you guys when you decide to wholesale versus flip? Is it if you can make twice as much on the flip, you're going to flip it versus a wholesale? Or is it a 70-30? What's the dynamic there?
A lot of times. If we're going to make twice as much on a flip, we'll definitely flip it. At the end of the day, anything that has the highest profit, we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And then as long as it fits our buy box criteria, most of the time, to be honest with you, a lot of the flips we take on, they just can't be wholesaled. The margin isn't there to wholesale it. So just think about, like, I don't do near as many flips as I did back in the day because we have a lot of big iBuyers buying stuff. But let's just call it, say, what, 6 flips a month or something, 4 to 6 flips a month at least. in Columbus. And if I didn't flip those 4 to 6 houses, that's 4 to 6 times 20 to 30 grand a pop that I wouldn't have even taken down, because you can't wholesale them. The only thing you can do is flip them.
Yeah.
So imagine taking that away from our revenue. The business model overall wouldn't make sense.
Yep. I've been in trouble there before. We tried to hold too many properties at once. And so like we historically have done full gut flips, and I wasn't watching that, that overhead and what was actually coming in and what was in the pipeline. And it was like, we tried to hold like 6 houses at once, tried to Airbnb them all. And all of a sudden I was like, oh wow, this caught up quick, like 30K a month in overhead, $90,000 burned in 3 months. And I was like, okay, well, that didn't work. So we had to sell some of them off. But I mean, that's the cool thing about real estate is if you have multiple exit strategies, there's always a way to recover, right? So one thing I wanted to dive into is do either one of you have a super tip for closing deals? So Josh, you go really deep on this as far as like sales scripts and kind of getting people to feel comfortable on the phone and trust you. I want to give the listeners, like, what is 1 to 2 super tips for closing deals?
So honestly, the first thing that pops to my mind is training yourself on a daily basis. Now, there's 2 different ways that we can look at training. A lot of people, if they even are focused on training, they're looking at, you know, Grant Cardone one day, Jordan Belfort the next sales guru, the next sales guru. And the reality is you have information overload and little to none of the information is actually implemented. So instead, what we've done is we identified the fundamentals of our sales process. And we thought to ourselves, hey, what are the few things that we could do that if we were truly masters at these few things, that it would give us or at least a chance to land 90, 95% of the opportunities that we come across. Mm-hmm. So we identified 4 fundamentals, and no different than like Michael Jordan, you know, arguably the best basketball player of all time. What would he do every day when he showed up to practice? Well, he would practice the fundamentals, right? He would shoot free throws. He would warm up doing layups. He would do dribbling drills. You know, we're no different. Even though we're not elite athletes, we still have to treat our craft as if we are elite athletes. So we have to be laser focused coming in every day. It's no different than like walking into the gym and wanting to bench press. On your first day in the gym, you're not going to throw up 350 pounds, right? You have to show up every day and you have to consistently work on getting those reps in. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, you know, we never rise to the occasion. So think of this example. It's 8:00 on a Thursday night towards the end of the week, and you have an opportunity on the phone and you have to land this opportunity in order for you to hit your goal. Well, what's going to happen? You're not going to just rise to the occasion. Instead, what's going to happen is you're going to fall back to the level of your training. Mm. So if you're focused on this daily training and building these muscles over time, in that moment, you won't even have to think. You'll be able to react, and your reaction is going to be on point. So find the fundamentals in your sales process or your script and be laser focused on those. What we've done is we actually pick one fundamental and we focus on that fundamental for the entire week versus bouncing around from topic to topic to topic. I want to make sure that I fully understand the psychology behind this sales tactic. And then I want to practice actually implementing it through role play. So pick one topic for each week and make that the theme for the week.
I see an underlying theme there. To me, it seems like really what you're breaking down is focus, right? The information overload is an interesting topic. One of the things that I've been trying to focus on is the fact that knowledge is not power. It's the implementation of the knowledge that's power. Right. So it doesn't, when we can consume an infinite amount of information, but if we do nothing with it, it was useless. So right. I kind of relate that to like people that say they want to read like 45 books a year. It's like, okay, that's cool. But how much of every single book that you're reading are you really going to implement into your business? Because if it's none, you didn't need to read 45 books. You're just going to sound cool in conversations, but you'll have no traction right. inside your business. So now I appreciate that thought process. And I think that to pinpoint one of the things you said, which was if you're learning from like a mentor, right? Whether it's somebody on YouTube or you're reading a book about sales scripts, or if it's you guys, it's really important to hone in on that one person, because everybody has conflicting ideas and views. And someone will say, you know, you never go for a close on the first call. And somebody else will say, you always go for a close on the first call. Maybe they're right. Maybe they're wrong. But I think what's more important is that you focus in on what one person's saying, so you're not confusing not only yourself, but everybody else on your team. I think that's huge. Well, I we'll wrap up the end of this episode here. You guys have dropped so much value. I feel like we could do like a whole freaking series. Like when Tiffany started talking about raising money, I'm like, well, let's dive into that. But I wanted to stay focused on like the operations and the sales side of growing a business. Let's dive into kind of your guys' hiring process, because I think that that's an interesting thing. You have a 4-step hiring process. Tiffany, do you want to break down what that looks like and why it's important to go through every single one of those steps?
Yep. So what we do is we actually delegate out to recruiting firms. So we have two primary ways in which we recruit. We have our recruiting companies that all are finding people. And then we also have a referral program internally. Our most successful program has been a referral program. So if you bring in someone to the company, you get paid out a total of $5,000 bonus after they've interviewed or after they've been at the company performing for at least 90 days. Then we delegate out to companies like Insight Global, local recruiting firms. They handle all of the fielding of applications and the phone interview process. They clearly understand the culture we're looking for and the type of person. Once they've identified that they think it's a good fit to get in front of Josh or I or my leader, they put us on a 15-minute Zoom call. In that Zoom call, we have very clear questions that we ask around, do the hours work? And we focus around core values. And do they seem hungry and coachable? From there, if they are worth our time, we bring them into the office for about an hour interview, and then we do a working interview with them no matter the role. So if they're a salesperson, they get thrown on the phones. We give them a script, and we normally do the follow-up specialist script. And it's not about being perfect. It's, are they coachable? We throw them on a screen. We see how can they maneuver two screens? How do they take feedback on clicking, typing? While they're on the phone, can they handle feedback and implementation at the same time? We try to get them on the phone with at least 3 sellers, so that way we can give them feedback and see if they implement it on the next one. From there, we might think, oh, they're a great fit or not a great fit. And let me tell you, there's a lot of people that I would have hired if I wouldn't have done the working interview. And then they did the working interview and had anxiety attacks being on the phone.
Oh man.
So if I could give anyone a piece of advice out of the interview process, is make sure they do a working interview and there's a strict process and agenda to that working interview. Mm-hmm. And then from there we do a couple of things. One of two things, either Josh or I, which we normally don't have time anymore to do a cocktail hour, lunch, breakfast, whatever. So normally someone on the team that they will be working with is the one doing that, because ultimately the team is the one that needs to say, hey, yes, I got to know them. We want to work with them. Will they fit in the culture? Will they fit in with the vibe? And that's why when you walk into my office, I always tell people it's like walking into a winning game at halftime in the locker room. Like all day, every day, when they come into the office, they're fist bumping, screaming, that's cheering, so awesome. Hitting gongs. It's high energy all the time. And if you come in and kill that vibe, you know, in a small office at the end of the day, it only takes one person to, you know, ruin a whole vibe. So the team then comes back and says, yes, I want them a part of the team or not. Mm-hmm. So that's how the interview process works. And then, you know, obviously we're really focused on the onboarding process.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you take time to get to know that person, but also when you're not wasting time, right? Like it's all blocked out. It's a 15-minute Zoom interview. Okay, are they on to the next phase or not? It's an hour in the office. Okay, are they on to the next phase or not? And then it's cool to actually see too that part of that last, the fourth step of the interview changed for you guys, because you guys used to do the cocktail hours, but it's like, I can tell that you're constantly reevaluating your business to either automate, delegate, or eliminate. And you've delegated that now to the team members to do the 4-step of the interview.
Yep.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, cool. We'll line out the rest of this episode. I always like to ask my guest, what is your guys' idea of chasing freedom?
Yeah, this is always a good question, because a lot of people define freedom in different ways. I feel like a lot of people in the world think that freedom means that you're just like chilling at home, doing nothing. Or, you know, riding a yacht and just letting your hair breeze in the wind. But for me, freedom is being able to choose the environment and the people that I want to be around every day. Like, if you don't love working, then why do you run a company? Mm-hmm. Like, I love being in the office. I love being with my team. And freedom to me is the ability to create the culture I want, the environment I want, the people that surround me that I choose to be surrounded by. And that's why you come into our office and there's this defined culture that everyone in there is craving. It's a safe environment. We all love each other. It's fun. It's energetic. And in corporate space, I didn't get to choose to have that environment. And so for me, freedom is getting to choose to be around the people that I want to be with, no matter if I'm working a 12-hour day or not. So for me, that's really what chasing freedom is.
Yeah. And to really piggyback off of that, not to mention again, the impact that we have, you know, the individuals that are in our office on our team, you know, we've truly changed lives. So that's awesome. Not to mention the people that we work with from an educational perspective and, the sellers that we work with, we have an opportunity to change lives. And then going to our vendors, you know, we're changing our vendors' lives, our private money lenders, we're changing their lives. So literally having the ability that everyone and every entity that touches our business, that we're truly changing lives is a very special thing.
I think that's huge. I mean, for me, it's like, it's all about fulfillment, right? Like I want to be fulfilled in life, and that comes from impacting others in a positive way. And it's wild to see like the private Facebook group that you guys run and getting to see some of those people that I, you know, the year and a half ago that I was part of your guys' program, remembering where they started, like Michael Fitzgerald, right? And then seeing where he is now. I had him on the podcast, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago. And we were talking about he had a $450,000 month. Like, that's insane, right? Like, it's so fun to watch them grow. And it's even cooler from your guys' perspective to be able to point back and say, hey, us sharing our systems, our sales techniques, our offer scripts, all of that allowed those people to get to that level. Because you really, I mean, the impact just keeps going down, right? Like not only did you change Michael's life and my life, but then it's like you changed our family's life, you changed our team members' lives, you changed their family's lives, like, right? Like it's insane. Like Justin right now is in, I don't know exactly where he went. I think the Dominican Republic. And it's like, he's going to be able to pay for dinners for his family and his mom and do all these things that he normally wouldn't have been able to do. And that's through the impact of my company, but it all chases right back up to you guys because you guys gave me the fundamentals for acquisitions and sales. So
yeah, we appreciate you saying that. But at the end of the day, man, you guys did all the hard work. You guys did all the hard work and you put it into play.
So you gave me the shortcuts, though.
Kudos to you guys.
Well, hey, guys, thanks so much for coming on this show. If my listeners want to get a hold of you, they want to become a part of you guys' programs, what's the best way to reach out?
Yeah, I mean, you can follow us on Instagram at Tiffany High Official or at Josh High Official. Or you can visit our website at tiffanyandjoshhigh.com.
Okay, cool. And guys, I don't throw out recommendations lightly. If I'm going to put that out there, I seriously mean it. Being a part of these guys' program seriously changed my business. I highly recommend you go, bare minimum, just start up a conversation and talk with them. You guys have different levels of programs that people can be a part of. There's one that it's a really low cost to join, right? It's just like, is it the virtual group?
$997,
yeah. $997. The value you guys gave me was probably 15, 25, 30X what it cost. And I joined the higher level program. So it's one of my favorite things to say is you're going to pay for education no matter what. You're either going to pay through mistakes and failure, and it's going to take longer and it's going to be more painful. Or you're going to pay through mentorship. And that could mean either monetary, like you're paying a mentor to teach you, or you're going to give up portions of your deals to mentors who are then going to walk you through it. But no matter what, you can't get away from paying. You pay either way. So,
yep.
Okay, cool, right, guys.
Well, thanks for having us on.
No, thank you so much for joining on, and we'll see you guys next time. All right, thanks for tuning into this week's episode, you guys. For more awesome real estate content, you can check out my Instagram. It's just Noah_Evans_real estate. It'll also be in the show notes. If you want to reach out to the guest, their contact information and websites and however else to get a hold of them will also be in the show notes. All of our podcast episodes get thrown up to YouTube. And for more awesome exclusive content, please go check out the website. We'll have that link in the show notes below as well. All right. Peace.